And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday. It's the 21st of November. How are you all getting on? I do hope you're very well and you are very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. If you're living across the Northwest, you will know we woke up to a lot of snow and ice and frost this morning. Hopefully it's not too bad weather wherever you're listening to us from. But we're all here and it's business as usual and the lines are open for you right now. If you want to raise an issue with us or comment on some of the topics and features we've got lined up for you over the next 3 hours, you WhatsApp or text 086 60 25000. Feel free to WhatsApp your voice notes if that suits you better. If you want to give us a call and speak to Caroline or Shannon, it's 07491 25000, and emails come into us at highlandradio.com, and you can email if you're listening to the podcast or indeed if you are listening overnight. We want your comments as well. And of course, the option is always there for you to watch the programme if you wish on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. That's on your mobile devices, your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Maybe you're picking up a nice smart TV for Black Friday and you can start watching us if you're at home and it suits you. But we're across your mobile devices as well, as I mentioned, on YouTube, on X at Highland Radio, and also on Facebook. Just search us there, you'll find us. Let's have a look at some of the newspapers this morning. Let's start with the Tyrconnell Tribune and some assessment of the election so far. With a week left until polling day, the election has not fired up any real passion or imagination among the public, despite high levels of canvassing. I wonder how engaged are we out there? Well, the leaders' debate on Monday night sent many to sleep before it was halfway through. So far, there's been a disconnect with the electorate, and Donegal is no different, despite the reality that a number of key battles are being fought out in the constituency. In a field of 20 candidates, the tally figures will quickly reveal that the hopes of many candidates will not stretch as far as saving their deposits and expenses. In 2020, the electorate was 125,911, with a valid poll of 62% to give a quota of 12,909. Expect the electorate this time to be around 134,000. However, there is growing uncertainty about the turnout on Friday week. Nevertheless, it's estimated the quota will be around 14,000 should the turnout hold at 62 achieved at the last general election. And legend has it that it's much easier holding on to an existing seat rather than challenging the local Dáil deputy. There will be changes in Donegal with Joe McHugh gone after a quarter of a century in politics. Fine Gael is facing a battle to hold their seat given their losses in June's local election. Fianna Fáil is bidding to win two seats, and Pat the Cope Gallagher is back in the frame and winning votes along the way. And perhaps he was not Fianna Fáil's favourite name going into the convention, but the Cope rose to the challenge in a battle for fair play and recognition for his lifelong work for the party, and is proud to serve for 60 years in good times and bad. And on it goes. Plenty more analysis, as you would expect, on the front of and inside the Tyrconnell Tribune there. The Donegal News lead story is details of planning being approved for an Islamic cultural centre. Letterkenny is set to see the construction of an Islamic cultural centre after plans were given the green light this week, despite residents voicing concerns over traffic congestion, safety and the close proximity of a holy well. Letterkenny Islamic Association, CLG, lodged plans with Donegal County Council in November of 23, seeking planning permission for the centre at Lisnennan and Letterkenny. Plans comprise the construction of an Islamic cultural centre to include the provision of a main building consisting of ground floor and first floor mezzanine prayer hall areas, male and female, a coffee dock sandwich bar area with associated ancillary spaces, offices, a meeting room and kitchenette, construction of an access road, footpath, car parking, cycle track with all associated retaining structure, site works, landscaping, bin enclosure, connection to the existing public sewer is contained within the application, within the planning permission application. So that's approved there. On to the Derry News this morning, and they report that two people have appeared at Derry Magistrates Court on a number of drugs charges, including possession of heroin. A 39-year-old man and a 36-year-old woman appeared and were granted anonymity due to the threat in the city. They were both charged with possession of heroin in November 18th. I wonder, is this the norm in other cities across Ireland and Britain, whereby you can appear in court on certain charges but your name is not revealed, or your names are not revealed because there could be a threat to you. It just makes you wonder, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it just makes you wonder, why is everyone not sort of offered that level of cover? I presume if you wanted to, especially if there's a crime with a victim, you could argue that anyone who's up in court and their name and address appears in the paper or wherever could be under threat. But obviously, maybe it's a specific situation as it relates to Derry. I don't know. 8 days until you vote in the election, if you choose to do so. So plenty of coverage, as you can imagine, across the nationals in Ireland. House prices are unlikely to fall in the short term, despite the plethora of election promises, experts have warned. New figures show the cost of an average home jumped 10% in the year to September. Housing Minister Dara O'Brien claimed his party's plans would spur on home building, which in turn would help cut prices. But independent economic Austin Hughes, economist, he said house price inflation was unlikely to ease off much anytime soon. The CSO figures show that in Dublin, price rises were just short of 11%, with a rise of 9.4% outside of Dublin. But you see, I mean, I'm not an economist by any stretch, but obviously there is a serious demand on housing and not enough housing as it stands. So that's driving prices up. But no matter how many houses you build, I think the drive for demand is going to continue, because more people might go, well, Ireland looks like a nice place to live, I'll go there because there's houses available. Or you could have more people that have moved abroad from Ireland saying, right now, maybe it's the time for me to go home because houses are available and affordable. So I can't really see an end to that anytime soon, the way the world's set up now, to be honest with you. So Austin Hughes's analysis doesn't surprise me in the slightest. The Irish Times, so my point being is I can't think you can rely on the market to provide affordable housing simply by building houses. They have to be set to affordable. The Irish Times tells us that Ukraine embassy in Dublin has criticised a call in Sinn Féin's general election manifesto for countries to stop supplying weapons to the country. I didn't see this. It's an interesting one. In a statement yesterday, the embassy said it was disturbed by the irresponsible call to stop supplying weapons to Ukraine. These weapons allow us to defend Ukrainian people and the global international rule-based security system. Lack of military aid will increase mass killings of Ukrainians and will have catastrophic consequences for the world. In its manifesto, Sinn Féin condemned Russia's war in Ukraine, but went on to say Ukraine, Russia, the United States and the EU should play a role in bringing the conflict to an end by putting the interests of the people of the region above other global interests. It went on to say all sides must cease the current unlimited supply of weapons into Ukraine, which has cost hundreds of thousands of lives. I mean, presumably as part of any, I don't know what they're trying to say in that, but presumably that's what everyone wants, isn't it? An end to the war, and therefore an end to the arming of Ukraine. But anyway, the Ukrainian embassy, I was going to say up in arms, but not happy with that. The Irish Daily Mail, step up to the plate on debate Taoiseach. Voters are being left shortchanged with only one three-way leaders election debate on TV. I'm not sure voters would see it as being shortchanged, to be honest with you. But anyway, that's how the paper frames it. With only one three-way leaders election debate on TV after Fine Gael cited logistics as to why Simon Harris couldn't take part in a planned showdown. The debate, due to be staged by Sky News and Today FM, was to take place tomorrow at 7 p.m. with both Matt Cooper and a Sky News presenter set to co-host. However, it's no longer going ahead, which means that in addition to the 10-way debate broadcast by RTE on Monday, there's only one more live TV debate before the election, the only three-way leaders debate before the last general election. There were five leaders debates. A professor of politics at Dublin City University, Gary Murphy, told the Irish Daily Mail, "The debate Monday night was a shambles with 10 on the stage. So, yes, I think Fine Gael are making a mistake. I think the public are being a bit shortchanged." What do you think? Do you think they're making a mistake? I don't know Simon Harris's logistics. It doesn't strike me as someone who would purposely try and avoid a debate. That being said, it's going to look like it can be framed that he's dodging a debate, but also it could be sort of framed that he's dodging a debate if it's not on RTE, because, you know, people will claim, and I'm not sure it's the case, but people will claim that he's perhaps better shielded on RTE. So that's the kind of conversation it opens up when he refuses to take part. I don't feel shortchanged personally, but that's grand. The Irish Farmers Journal, outgoing Taoiseach Simon Harris has pledged that his party will review how far payments are allocated among farmers and stated that schemes have to become more farmer friendly. In a bid to sway the farming vote towards Fine Gael on election day, he said the payment model of costs incurred and income foregone needs to be changed. The thing that is a little bit, the thing that is a little bit obvious, and it's not a commentary on anyone's policies or what have you, but it is kind of an obvious question that why now, right? So in terms of the VAT rates, the government wouldn't entertain VAT cuts for hospitality in the budget, but now everything's on the table. You know, farmers might say, well, we've had 13 years to make it simpler for us to draw down on these monies. Like, why now, in the mouth of an election, all of a sudden is it a priority to make it easier, and so on and so forth? And I think that's all the kind of stuff people consider, I suppose, when they're trying to decide who to vote for. Maybe they're content with the way things are. Maybe they want change. It's up to each individual, of course. Just an update on the ongoing Garda investigation into the Dublin riots. And one of those involved got quite a stiff sentence. He threw a burning box into a cop car. I remember watching this live, actually. I was thinking, why are you doing that? But anyway, this fella, he threw a burning box into a cop car to set it on fire during the Dublin riots. He's been jailed for 6.5 years. Declan Donaghy, 28, also attacked a migrant centre on the night of hell, as they framed it. He admitted to arson, violent disorder and criminal damage on November 23rd, 2023. And in a handwritten letter read to Dublin Circuit Criminal Court, Donaghy apologised to the government and everyone involved. Yesterday, Judge Orla Crowe noted there was €16,000 worth of damage done to Dublin City Dorms, which had 50 residents on the day. However, a further €53,000 was spent on security personnel following the attack. He sentenced to 6.5 years. And the Gardaí are looking to track down more people, somewhat in a controversial move. They published the images of in excess of 100 people to try and get information on them from the public. Well, Gardaí have now removed photos of 18 people officers were seeking to identify as part of their probe into the Dublin riots. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. Officers had released 99 images of persons of interest in the probe in the hope the public could help identify them. They also said they wanted anyone who recognised themselves in the images released by specialist teams at Store Street Station to come forward as well. Gardaí also stressed that the persons of intent could be ruled out or in from the probe. Okay, but I don't think I'm compromising any potential court cases here. I mean, a lot of these images were people in a shop in CCTV that was closed with 3 boxes of shoes in their hands. So I'm not sure how they would come forward and mitigate that. But anyway, the Gardaí is saying that to cover themselves. 5 images were removed from the list within hours of it being published on Tuesday morning, and a further 13 taken off yesterday. There's still a bit of controversy about that type of move, but that controversy quickly died down, obviously. And finally, in the Irish Daily Star, thousands of women could sue one of the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies after using its cancer-causing talcum powder. I've avoided talcum powder for years off the back of early concerns I heard in relation to this. It's primarily women, but anyway, it still concerned me. Lawyers working on behalf of cancer victims and their relatives are launching a group action against Johnson & Johnson, the biggest seller of talcum powder. KP Law has issued a letter to the firm, which has until the end of the year to respond before documents will be filed in the High Court. It comes amid growing fears asbestos in its products allegedly gave them ovarian cancer. And I remember hearing those warnings and those concerns on that many, 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 many years ago. Okay, so that's some of the stories making the papers today. Anything of interest there? And you want to comment, you know the numbers, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back very shortly. Genuinely, personally, upset to hear of the news of the passing of one of Donegal's most persistent, hard-working politicians, Seamus Rogers. He has sadly passed away at the age of 90. He was first elected onto Donegal County Council in 1960, and he contested 12 Dáil elections. a council seat 11 times. He had the hat in the ring for two European elections and also stood in three Uddrysnagelthachtar elections. He was also involved with the SIPDIB trade union. He was an official there, and on it goes, his life work, an incredibly busy one, and very much dedicated to the people, the public and workers. Dinny McGinley is a former Fine Gael deputy and Minister of State in the Gaeltacht and lived close to Seamus, and of course paths would have crossed on many occasions. Dinny, good morning to you, and sorry to be speaking to you in the wake of this sad news.
Good morning, Greg. And it came to a great shock to all of us this morning to hear the sad news that Seamus Rogers has passed away. A man who has been in public life and a public person here in Donegal long before I ever even thought of going into politics, and has been a public person right up to the time of his death. Not alone was he a political colleague in hand, we all were at the same game for a long number of years, but he was also I would consider him a dear personal friend, and I think that the that was mutual. And the first thing I would like to do, of course, is to extend my deepest, sincerest sympathy and condolences to his wife, Teresa, and his daughter, Rosemary. He'll be sadly missed by this area, this part of Donegal, and particularly by his own family.
His contribution politically is extensive. Just 21 years of age when he was elected onto the local council in 1960. So a young man, but clearly a man that even at that young age saw that there were, you know, gaps that needed to be filled, and he felt he was that person to do it.
Absolutely. I know that Seamus Rogers was a public representative, an elected public representative, 20 years before I even considered it. And we were there together for almost 35. I've been there for almost 35 years, and Seamus was still, though not an elected public representative, still a spokesman on behalf of his party, the Labour Party. He was always there and always available to give their line, whether it was whatever issue was involved, or even during elections. He had a long record. I don't know how many elections, between county council elections, elections for Dáil Éireann, elections for Uddrysnagelthachtar. I think it was probably a national record. And as I said, Seamus was liked and admired by everyone. I would say that Seamus was one of the few people who never made an enemy in politics, but it was all friends. And he was very involved, not alone in politics, but in sport, of course. He was a founder member of the local GA, the Muia, and president of it for many years. And he also was president or chairman of the county board of the GAA. And he was involved in so many other activities to do, whether it was care of the aged. He was particularly interested in the welfare of the islands. And many of the time during the elections, we were in Armagh. And I remember the first time I was in Armagh, I think it was 1980-81, a wet Sunday it was. Seamus was there as well. He had two important people who became very legal luminaries afterwards. And I happened to have one of these megaphones, and I was only glad to hand it over to them for their use a wet Sunday morning outside the church in Armagh. I think it was 1980. Particularly interested, I say, in the islands, care of the age. No matter what issue was involved, Seamus had something to say, something to contribute. And he was dedicated, and he was sincere, and he was liked. And when he ceased being a public representative, he still was there. We'd be at the wakes and we'd be at funerals, and Seamus was always there as well. Always acted and worked on behalf of his people and on behalf of the public. And he was, of course, very interested in the Irish language and always used it at any time it was possible. He was an institution in West Donegal, Seamus Rogers, liked by everyone, dedicated, as I say, and sincere.
If the absolute majority of us will never stand for election, what does it take to contest the 12 Dáil elections, 11 council elections, two Europeans, three Uddras, whilst also being involved as broadly as it was in the community? I mean, that takes a special level of dedication, Denny.
Absolutely. Seamus devoted his entire life to it. Right up to these last number of months, he still was involved. It's not so long ago, a few weeks, maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, he was on the phone to me about something, and we had a chat, and he was still as interested in what was going on as I was the first day that I met him. It takes a lot of dedication. It takes a you put all your whole into being, you know, working for the people and doing your best. And of course, he had a great support at home as well. His wife Teresa was there for him all the time, and as was his beloved daughter Rosemary, who's doing so very well, went on now, and she has carved out for herself a legal career as well.
Yes, and of course, whilst he was able to have an influence whilst elected, I think there's no doubt, given how vocal he was and how he was, you know, he seemed to always raise issues that were very of the people, if you know where I'm coming from with that. So even when not elected, I've no doubt that he held the feet to the fire of a lot of people who were elected, and progress was made in that way through him as well.
Well, I know my own experience, my brief time as a minister for 3 or 4 years, he was continuously on. I remember he was very anxious that some facilities should be provided for the Amuya there, lighting for the pitch there. And I remember we didn't have much money, but we were able to give allocate some money at that time. He was kind enough to invite me over to switch it on. But it would never have happened only for the continuous representation by Seamus for that particular facility and the field over there in as we call the Banks, mm-hmm. the Amuya's area there. He was always advocating and always making representations about various things. If there's something he wanted to raise in the Dáil, a question or something that I often had word from him, was only too glad to put down and table a question for him. Now, so I think that we have the Irish language in common, and we were close neighbours, and, you know, if I had any problem to do with the county council that I thought Seamus would have some assistance, he was more than ready to help. So he was able to he cooperated with everyone. Okay. As I say, he didn't have one enemy. He met so many councillors come and councillors go. After all, he was there for almost 40 years, and I don't think that he ever had a cross word with one of them.
All right.
And that is my opinion.
Thank you so very much for that, Dinny McGinley, former Fine Gael deputy.
It's a sad day.
It is, indeed. Very
end,
sad.
It's the end of an era here in this area at the Passion of Seamus, and I think we're all so sorry. And again, my deepest sympathy to Teresa, Rosemary, and indeed his many, many relations and friends and neighbours.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Dinny McGinley, former Fine Gael deputy and Minister of State in the Gaeltacht. We're also joined by Pat the Coat Gallagher. Pat, thanks very much for joining us. And again, just like my opening remarks to Denny, sad to be speaking to you in the wake of this sad news of a legend of Donegal politics and his passing.
Yes, Greg, a dark cloud descended over Donegal this morning when the news broke of Seamus Rogers' death. He had been ill for some time. And of course, Seamus, a legend. Even in his own lifetime, he served the people of West Donegal and did the entire county for many years. When he was first elected as a young man onto Donegal County Council, and at all subsequent elections until he decided to stand down. Seamus Rogers touched the lives of so many people. I remember when I served with him in the council, I was elected. He was a member in 1979. He was helpful to me. And I was there until 1991. And in all that time, we never crossed a word. He, of course, is interrelated. My wife, Anne, is a first cousin of Seamus's, a big connection of that family. He was very involved in housing at the time. And I think he would be saddened now if he were to see the slow progress that's been made in housing. We, at that time, were pursuing the SI cottages, people building on their own land, and the houses were mushrooming at that time. But Seamus, as Dunny has said, he was very involved in the Irish language, the GAA, all cultural activities. But I will remember Seamus for meetings prior to the building of the houses by the parents and friends. This is a part of him that many people didn't see. He was very involved with that committee, as was the late Noreen McGarvey. Three houses, 12 units, state-of-the-art units built at Firhill Dunloe. I had the pleasure of opening them. Unfortunately, Seamus, due to ill health, wasn't able to attend. But he'll be remembered for so many things that he did publicly, but more importantly, the many things that he would have done privately and assisting people, and particularly on Ardmore Island, right across the county.
Yeah, indeed. Pat the Colt Gallagher, thank you so very much indeed for those kind words. Remembering Seamus Rogers, who passed away at Letterkenny University Hospital, of Annagree West, of course. His remains will be reposing at McGlynn's Funeral Home this evening from 5 o'clock, rosary at 8. Tomorrow Friday, reposing from 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock with a private removal to his own house. And the house then will be private the morning of the funeral as well. Funeral Mass is on Saturday morning in the Star of the Sea Church, Annagree, at 11 o'clock, with interment afterwards in the old cemetery. And someone who would have known Seamus well and who would have shared the council chamber with him on many, many, many occasions is former councillor Ian McGarvey. Imagine why, Ian, thanks so much for joining us.
Imagine why, Greg, that's Brunner and Merhulamison.
He, like you, Ian, had a particular interest in the elderly. I think I don't think I'm inaccurate in saying that. That's something I've always
right, Greg,
associated you with, and Mr. Rogers.
He used to come out to the meetings and everything else along with others. Fred Call, for example, people like that, and even the friends of the hospital. And now, actually, during the week, this is unbelievable. I was talking to Mary Boyle. I was trying to contact Seamus as well, because recall all the time how dedicated he had been. There was one example of Seamus Rogers, and I was going to the Islands Committee meetings, and he was raising about the Doctor's Road in Ardmore. And I never saw a man so dedicated to get something done as Seamus Rogers was. But he was the same in everything, and I couldn't let it pass when I heard it this morning. And it was so regrettable, because I was trying to contact him there last week through Mary Boyle in the council offices in Dunloe, and she said he hadn't been so well, and I was very sorry to hear that. So to be associated with the family and to all the people who knew Seamus Rogers, I'd like to convey my sincere sympathy at his passing, because people like that, the contribution they made, you couldn't determine the value of it as well over the years. And during my time in the council, and during my time attending the Islands Committee and Dunloe and all the rest of it, Seamus Rogers was so dedicated, and it's quite regrettable and strange to say that I was only accidentally heard it this morning. Other than that, it would have happened without me knowing. But as I say again, Greg, thanks for taking me on, number one, and number two, the opportunity to convey my sympathy to relatives, friends of Seamus's, and everybody else associated in the West.
Okay.
So thanks very much.
Ian, thank you so much for that. I do appreciate it. Seamus Bouverd's current chairman of the Labour Party in Donegal, and for many of us, Seamus, and for many still, I suppose, and this is not a slight on the Labour Party, more of a credit to Seamus Rogers latterly. He was, you know, Mr. Labour, is how I would have viewed him, to be honest with you.
Yes, he was. He flew the flag for over 60 years, and put his head above the parapet on certain subjects that others wouldn't have. So credit where credit's due. I met him a good while ago when he was sort of a legend then. And the contact that he had, he knew everybody, knew all about them, knew what people wanted. He had a knowledge of his, what would you call it, his territory. Like between the time when all the Udarus factories were on the go, and then latterly in Letterkenny with SIPTU, he was out and about all the time. He knew exactly, he knew the pulse of the county.
And you know, I mean, obviously, it's the end of an era, but a legacy that will last a lifetime. There's just absolutely no doubt about that. It just, I think nowadays what we see is politicians, and no criticism of them, can retire quite young. You know, we've seen politicians retiring in their 30s or 40s and 50s and moving on to life after politics. His persistence to the cause is unmatched, I think, in terms of, you know, his longevity on the council, his working in local politics, both elected, non-elected, and also that drive and determination, even when odds were stacked against him, to have his name and the Labour Party emblem on, you know, on that polling card. Such a level of commitment that I'm not sure we'll ever see again. We certainly won't see much of it again. Just to have someone who was so persistent in fighting for the people of his area.
Yes, he did devote a lifetime to it. We think back of various campaigns that he would have been involved in that were non-political, shall we say. Local support. People, like, he had a network. So if you asked him for help, if he didn't know, he knew someone who did.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
And then, as I say, he was always on the batter, as they say. It wasn't just all about politics. There was social issues, community issues that he was engaged in as well. Seamus just lived for the community, and he lived for his politics.
Okay. Seamus Byfaird, current chair of the Labour Party in Donegal, thank you. We'll be back with more after this quick break. We are continuing our reflections on the very sad passing of Seamus Rogers. He's died at the age of 90. And for many of us, he will be associated with Labour, but he was also involved in other areas of politics as well. We have Deputy Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin with us as well. Deputy Doherty, thank you for joining us to remember Seamus this morning.
Thank you, Greg, and thanks just for giving me the opportunity because, you know, Seamus was a giant of political politics. He ran in, I think, all of the different elections down throughout the years, long before I was even born. He was running for elections and actually ran for Sinn Féin and was elected to the council. And obviously then was in Sinn Féin and the Workers' Party, and then the Workers' Party and Democratic Left and Labour Party. And, you know, he was always a person who put his community first. I know going around canvassing, Greg, you still hear, if you're out around Arranmore or Litchimack Ward or indeed in Annagrey, you'll still hear people talk about Seamus Rogers. And indeed, some people would always say that they always thought he was still Sinn Féin, but the work and his legacy that he left behind was massive. And I was up in the House yesterday as I was on my campaign trail and heard the news that he was taken to hospital. And I'm deeply sorry to learn late last night that he had passed away. But he was such a, you know, people talk about people when they pass, but Seamus Rogers was such a fellow of integrity, such a man of integrity, such a man of compassion. And he really, really deeply believed in his community, deeply believed in the working person, in working class communities and the Gaeltacht communities, his work for the older people and his work in terms of trade unionism. And it's really sad to see that somebody of the stature of Seamus has passed. And I really feel for his family today, for his wife, Teresa Rosemary, and his sisters, who are obviously grieving today on that news.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad. Pierce, when you've talked outside, not outside of politics, okay, but, you know, not in a chamber or in a political a political environment, was the conversation always political? I know you did know him well, or did he like to talk about other things with you, or did it always come round to maybe pushing the case for his local community?
Look, the conversations we always had were very political. I think Seamus, if you look at his legacy right back from the 1960s, was campaigning and fighting elections. Indeed, I was just actually remarking yesterday to some of my own staff before I called up to Seamus's house, is, you know, who's running for Labour in the election, because there was one kind of certainty right throughout life from the 1960s is Seamus Rogers' name was on the ballot paper. But it was always, you know, local issues. It was always about the Gaeltacht communities, the island communities, the working person. It was, you know, he was deeply rooted in politics. He had a passion about it, and that's why he continued to strive. And he was obviously a big, you know, a sports person, GA person. He was rooted in everything in terms of his community, and he was just one of those people who was kind of gentle, compassionate, kind, and always there for you, you know, always there for his community. And even though in many of the elections he stood in, whether it was general or European or in later times, council elections, you know, he was still, as I said, representing his community. And that was coming back to me on the doorstep when I became canvassing. That Seamus was always there for them.
Okay. Deputy Pearse Doherty of Sinn Féin, thank you very much for your time. And of course, we extend our sympathies, as everyone who's joined us today has, and I'm sure all of you out there listening will be today, to his wife, Teresa, a native of Glenties, his daughter, Rosemary, who's based in Sligo, as you heard referenced, as well as his two sisters, Breed Wilson of Annagree and Mary McCafferty of Dunluey. He's predeceased by his brother Joe and parents Mary and Eddie Rogers. His remains are reposing at his home this evening from 5 with Rosary at 8. Tomorrow, reposing from 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock with a private removal to his own house. Sorry, can I just clarify that for one moment? Seamus's remains will be reposing at McGlynn's funeral home this evening from 5. With Rosary 8. So just to clarify, Seamus's remains reposing this evening at McGlynn's funeral home. Tomorrow, reposing at McGlynn's funeral home from 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock, then with private removal to his own house, and his own house will be private the morning of the funeral as well. And funeral masses on Saturday in Star of the Sea Church, Annagree, at 11 o'clock with interment afterwards in the old cemetery. And just to make sure it's absolutely clear, Seamus's remains will be reposing at McGlynn's funeral home this evening between from 5 and tomorrow between 3 and 6. We'll be back soon. Right, let's get to some comments. Good morning, Greg. Not everyone wants the Ukrainian war to end. The British have prevented a deal being done on it for over a year by Boris Johnson. The US and NATO continually provoke Russia and have done for years. A whole generation of Ukrainians have been annihilated, with only those that got out surviving. As for their billionaire dictator, Zelensky, with as much blood on his hands as the UK, USA, I could only imagine what surviving Ukrainians think of him. Well, I mean, I suppose often when we break things down to the most simplest of parts, and there's no doubt, and I think we said it, and it was discussed on this show from day one, that this was a proxy war, of course. But Russia aren't angels either, not the Russian people as such, but certainly through Vladimir Putin. And he has his own ambitions and his own pushing for power and to readjust the world order as well. He's very keen on a new world order. So there's an awful lot in it for him as well. You know, he's not sitting there as some sort of a victim. Paul Canning, sorry, you are there now, Paul. As I say, we're going to talk about an issue raised by a listener. But as I mentioned just before I lost you there, I'm sure you want to mention the late Seamus Rogers, who you served with on the council.
Yeah, definitely. I want to pay tribute to Seamus Rogers and condolences to his wife, Teresa, and to his daughter, Rosemary. Seamus was on I was the chair of the planning SPC for a good few years, and Seamus was on the planning SPC, never missed a meeting, last man to go, and he was like a dog with a bow, and they always kept going back to his, you know, he had great enthusiasm and great energy, and you know, was genuine, a very genuine man, you know. So it's sad to hear the news this morning, but as I say, condolences to his family and his friends.
For sure, but what a legacy and a life story for us all to be able to reflect on for many many years to come. Now, we received a WhatsApp from a listener, and it says, does any of the 9 till noon show listeners know what this sign might be for? It looks like it could be for a permanent speed camera. If that's the case, would it be the first one in Donegal also? It seems like an odd spot for barriers right on a straight stretch of road between Newton and Manor. Now, those watching will be able to see this. It is a yellow post with an arm coming out and then an arm going up sort of in an L shape on its side. It does look like it is designed to accommodate a speed camera. Do you know what it's for, Paul?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's going to be a speed camera. And it's sort of a collaboration of Donegal County Council, TIE and the Garda and the GoSave. And there's going to be a permanent, and you're right, it's the first in the county. And it's going to be a permanent speed camera. And actually, there's only out in the rural area, there's only six in the country. There's another two. There's one in Mayo. There's another one in Mayo, and there's one in Cavan. So the situation with it is, we do our traffic analysis, and there's a lot of speed on that part, that stretch of the road. And we have a junction there that takes a lot of traffic to Lufford. It's the I would know it as locally as the Galdner junction. So we are looking at that whole design of that junction as well. But we have to take one step at a time. So this is where the speed camera is coming into play.
And how does that work, Paul? Do they say, look, we're thinking of sticking, we only have a handful of them, thinking of sticking one permanent camera in, where do you want it to go? Or was this off the back of concerns about that junction and speeding in the area and applying for one of these cameras? What's the mechanics of that?
Yeah, the mechanics of it, there is, the conversation goes on with the Gardaí. And unfortunately, and we've been told a lot of the times where people don't report the minor accidents, they sort of agree among themselves and the accidents are not reported. And then we're not getting the true figures a lot of the time, but it's based on figures and on accidents on stretches of roads. And that's where the initial planning starts from.
Do we know if this camera is catching traffic on both sides? Is it going to be one of those dual cameras where one's pointing up the way and one's pointing down the way?
I would say within a week of it being up, we'll know. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I can't tell you the day. You know, I don't know, but I'm sure people will get to know about it. But listen, the main objective is to slow the traffic down. There's serious speed that comes when you're coming from the Letterkenny area, heading in the Derry direction, coming over that hill. And there is cars then that's trying to manoeuvre into the Galdner Road, and you have traffic maybe passing three cars behind, and then all of a sudden there's a serious accident there.
And that's exactly what we want to avoid. There's adequate signage, particularly on the Derry side. I think it's the Derry side where it's you're coming round a corner, you could get caught out there very easily. You shouldn't be speeding in the first place, of course. And just finally and briefly, the function of the barriers on a straight stretch of road, is that the norm with when there is a static speed camera there, or what's the logic there?
Yeah, it's to protect the camera, as to keep traffic out, because the camera will be a little bit further out at the top, so you could have a vehicle pulling on there, and it's to keep a distance. We'll say you'd a lorry just pulled down and it wanted to get it off the hard shoulder. The barrier keeps it out that it's not catching on the camera.
And as you say that, you can sort of see the logic of that. Okay, listen,
yeah,
thanks
listen,
very much.
Yeah, if this works, you know, we will be rolling it out through other areas of the county as well, hopefully. Okay. So hopefully it does work.
We shall see. Listen, Paul, thank you very much indeed. Councillor Paul Canning there. Time for a break for the news and obituary notices. We'll be right back.